episode was recorded in southeast Queensland on the traditional lands of the Gubbi Gubbi people. Their country includes Redcliffe, Caboolture, Bribie Island, Noosa, Rainbow Beach, Hervey Bay, Maryborough and Gympie. This incredible part of the world includes beaches, oceans, lakes, rivers, creeks, mountains and forests. I pay my respect to Gubbi Gubbi elders past and present. Welcome to Weekend Better Podcast. I'm your host, Kirsty Costa. It's nice to speak to you again. Listeners like you have been using the contact form on the Weekend Birder website to request different topics. Today's topic, the Eastern Offspray, was requested by Andrew, Lisa, Robin and Will. And have I got a guest for you? Meet retired TV journalist, producer and now keen birdwatcher and wildlife photographer, Pip Grant Taylor.
As a kid, my parents both were scientists and they were interested in pretty well anything. You know, they are earth scientists. Daddy was just passionate about them and he got involved with bird banding of two species in New Zealand. So that was the silver eye and the grey fantail. I was so quick and I had such amazing reflexes apparently that I could pluck them out of the air. I can't remember how often we did it, but we did it relatively often. So it was banding new birds and picking up the old ones and recording the numbers and whatnot. And that became quite a passionate with, you know, for somebody little doing something actually quite special.
When the children in Pip's family came of age, they were not only invited to go on bird field trips, they were also allowed to use the Box Brownie. The Brownie camera, made by Kodak, was a simple box-shaped camera that revolutionised photography for the masses in the early 1900s. Imagine a rectangular box, often made of cardboard covered in leatherette or bakelite. There were no zoom lenses, f-stops or shutter speed adjustments. The Box Brownie had a basic lens and a push button to take the photo. It was affordable, easy to use and allowed everyday people to jump into the world of photography. And for Pip, the camera provided a new way to look at the living systems around her.
I think it was just, I don't know, it's just something that grabs you and you think, oh my God, how fascinating, in whatever minute way a child of that age does. It's what you learn. For me, it's a pleasurable science-based project for me. Every time I go out taking photographs, I strive to take decent enough photographs so that I can learn about the birds. The byproduct of that is that if I don't know anything about a particular bird, then back to the computer and I collect up as much information as I can and then being a loudmouth, I share it with everybody I know.
There came a time where Pip didn't get a chance to use her camera much because she started working in the television industry and that involved long hours. And then, 12 years ago, she discovered her love of the Eastern Offspray.
As kids, Daddy used to always see the hawks over New Zealand flying over wherever, so he always used to point them out. So it was bigger birds captured me to start with, and then when I came up to Brisbane, there was not much work around in my industry, so I filled my time volunteering at Osprey House Environment Centre, and they have an osprey nest that has cameras on it. It wasn't too long before I started to actually admin that project when the fellow who was doing it decided that he had to go to better things. Even before I took over, I had a lot of time just watching and thinking, oh my God, these are amazing, and they're so pretty. They just really charismatic birds, and they're known for people just looking at them and think, oh, wow. Oh, well, that was me. There it started, and then learning through the monitoring. Ridiculous statistics, but somebody asked me how much osprey I'd watched. And so I thought, well, apart from going out and visiting the nests that I visit, and that's quite a few, I thought I'd just do a quick estimation of how much footage I would have looked at. So as the admin and the logger and archiver at Osprey House, I looked at every single minute of footage. So I added that up, that over about 10 or 11 years, 118,000 hours of osprey life have I seen. Mammoth amount of time I spent watching ospreys. And then I visit 41 nests. The beauty of modern days with the Nest cameras and whatnot is that the science that was done before the advent of these things was a bit fragmented because the researchers had other things that they had to be doing. So they only spent at the Nest in blocks. So it's really a whole new ball game now with the cameras. And the amazing thing about the cameras is that every species that has a camera on it has devotees that log, that share, that talk, that create Facebook pages, that tell each other what's going on, have parties about it and whatnot. So it isn't just as an obsession that has people sitting behind a camera, you know, in front of a camera or whatever. It's an obsession that is incredibly social. It embarrasses me how many people know who I am. Half of that's my big fat trap because I talk to anybody at any Nest I'm at and people come and say, what are you doing? But it's good because it's raising the level of interest and consideration for the bird species because there are lots of people who are just as bad as I am. So, you know, we're getting the message out there and the more people who care, the more chance we've got of being here past 2050.
Wow, 118,000 hours. Watching the eastern osprey has led Pip to becoming quite the expert. She's going to help us get to know this incredible bird. Let's start with what the eastern osprey looks like.
Ospreys were discovered about 13 to 15 million years ago as fossils in America, down in California and Florida. They say that the general look of them hasn't changed that much in terms of design, but they're considerably more robust these days than they were obviously when they were starting their little journey. Put a comparison on that, we've been around as humans between 5 and 7 million years, so they've been around for almost twice the amount of time that we have. They're big birds, so they've got a wingspan of up to 1.8 metres and they stand about 60 centimetres foot to head when they're at rest. The body length of a female, it can be anywhere between 55 and 65 centimetres, males 53 to 60. So they're a little shorter. It's a pretty outstanding bird. It's considered quite a charismatic bird. So there are things that you look for. So across the eye, they have what's called a mask. It's just a brown stripe that runs through the eye from the beak through the eye and down the back of head to the neck where it connects into the back feathers. And that can be any size, any shape, but every osprey is actually significantly different in the presentation of that mask. They have a beautiful dark chocolatey brown plumage across the front. And this is where you probably learn, or for me, it was where I learned best to tell the difference between males and females, is that there's a band of feathers, which these days we all identify as being called a necklace. In the female, it's quite a lot deeper. So I'd say it goes from just above where our clavicle is down to about nipple line, for want of a better description. In the male, it starts at the clavicle. And it goes a couple of rows of feathers shorter. So it's actually quite an obvious difference. But one thing I noticed when I was looking at all of the chicks is that the imprint of that necklace is actually pretty evident in the chicks at second down. So when they start to get the coloured down feathers that they get before they start to get proper feathers, you can actually see a band of darkness. And that seems to equate quite nicely with whereabouts that necklace is going to be. So that's a really good pointer. Under the wings when they're in flight is another really good way of identifying. And I know every osprey I've ever seen because the markings under wing are so different. So they've got at the elbow, the furthest away bit elbow, is a dark patch. And off that comes a whole bunch of other bits and pieces that go down onto the wings. The tips of their wings, feathers, are dark chocolate. In the States and whatnot, they tend to go further to the black colour than we do here. Ours are quite chocolate and chestnut all through. All of the flight feathers, so that's the from the tips of the wings all the way up to the body, are barred. So they've got stripes that go horizontally across the feathers. On the coverts to those flight feathers, secondaries, there are very often spots and splotches and things which give you a pattern. And then it's white. And the breast below the necklace down to the tail is white, but there might be dark streaking or whatever, but it is largely white. So that's what you're going to see. If you see that that in particular at the elbows, wrists, whichever you call it, want to call it, that dark splotch and then barring on the wings, but on white, then you've got an osprey in front of you.
Next up, Pip wants to tell us about the eastern osprey's habitat and its nesting behaviours.
The osprey is a fish-eating hawk. So to that end, they say 99% of their diet is fresh fish eaten live. That being said, they don't mind what water or what fish. So that could be a lake, a river, a wetland that's got water that's deep enough for them to dive in safely and catch fish of a reasonable size to feed them and their families. Right the way around the coast of Australia would be an option, but in Australia, unfortunately, they're not seen so much in Victoria, though that seems to be improving, but they're still not nesting there and not seen in Tasmania. In South Australia, they're endangered, but there's an amazing project on at the moment with installation of as many platforms as they can possibly get up to give the ospreys that are coming through breeding seasons successfully places to go build their own nests. They also, in terms of places to put their nests, are picky only insofar as they've got clear air above. So they like to actually use dead trees with few to no leaves or branches, but one that will sustain up to 100 kilograms, I think, of the biggest nests. Having said that, they can do also anything from ground nests, if there are no predators, to power pylons, stadium lights at footy grounds and whatnot. There's a nest in America that's on the top of the crown of a statue. So widespread and pretty well anywhere if the water's good enough to sustain fish. But they can be seen in cities as well. You know, there's an osprey nest just down the road from me, and it's right by a train station and it's right beside a main arterial road. There are some very tall osprey nests that probably would be at least, well, on a squat like me, shoulder height. So ospreys just build up every year. They don't rebuild unless, of course, somebody's come along and moved their nest because they've deemed it inappropriate. But the story on that, which I can tell you, which tells you how persistent they can be, just before the beginning of breeding season, our local council here decided that it was probably time to move that nest because it was on village green lights. So that doubled as a sort of a little village sports ground as well. Okay. So they took it out at the end of February, which was a bit naughty because it was very close to breeding season anyway. And the ospreys were obviously away doing their, oh yeah, we're going to have a bit of a holiday from the nest. We'll come back and start building it a bit later. So let's say the last day of February, the nest went on the 19th of March, first stick laid in exactly the same place. They took 6 weeks to rebuild that nest to a point where they could put an egg in. But that's how persistent they can be when they think that there's a good spot. So they could see three lakes and a river.
The lifespan of an osprey is about 20 to 25 years. Pip says that their unique adaptations help them to survive, like their ability to hunt and catch their prey.
The toes of osprey can snap shut in 0.02 seconds on a fish, which is probably not surprising because the fish are very slippery and fast, and if they know that there's a predator on their way, as an osprey obviously is, then they're going to move as fast as they can down. So they've got to be fast. When a chick is hatched, its talons are pretty well how they're going to be, though they grow bigger obviously as the chick grows bigger. But they're born into a very smooth skin, and it's not until after they've started to really get all of their feathers and whatnot that they put on these little lumps and bumps that are all over their feet called spicules. Those help hold slippery fish. So the spicules and the bumps and lumps are actually there for a very, very specific purpose. Ospreys aren't the only raptor that has that. All of the diving raptors that we see, white-bellied seagull, Brahmini kite, whistling kite, all do also have the spicules, but perhaps not quite to the same degree as the ospreys. The ospreys, however, are one of the very few raptors that can hover. So in its hunting, it'll spy something when it's looking down into the water. It's doing its computation as to where and what the fish is going to do and where it's going. And so it can actually do a short hover to keep it in place while it goes through all of that process, which is pretty amazing because they're a big bird to be hovering. You know, your kestrels and the little black-shouldered kite, leatherwing kites and all of those, they do hover because they're looking for fast-moving things on the ground and they need to be able to stay in one place to do their own computation as well. And from about 1 week of age, they can actually eject fecal material over the edge of the nest, which is pretty amazing because they're pretty small when they start out. They're a wee bit bigger than a chook's chick. But to have that ability, it's that very strong sphincter muscles to get rid of the stuff, keeps the nest a lot cleaner than some birds do. It's pretty amazing.
I don't know about you, but I've never thought about how birds keep their nest clean. And now we have a very strong image of an osprey chick shooting poo over the side of its nest. So good, man. I love this podcast. Previous weekend birder guests have told us about the importance of not disturbing a bird in its nest, which can affect the survival of chicks. Pip is really mindful of this and uses different techniques to keep her distance. She says that having cameras installed on nests is also another way to learn about the osprey and other living things in its environment without disturbing its day.
The most fascinating thing of all was the bits of fish that were left behind and the number of different insects that came out and demolished those bits of fish in such a short time, because obviously with this load of wood that's been taken off anywhere on the ground, they bring in all of the species with them. And added to that, actually, ospreys and any bird have a mammoth load of travellers on them, so all sorts of bugs and grubs and whatnot. And you can see, again, if you watch the nest cameras and they've been zoomed in, you can actually see the insects moving in and out of the plumage, looking for somewhere better to go and bite or clean or do whatever they do. So all species are a microcosm of their own little collection of bacteria and bugs. People always have to be cognizant about visiting any species, whether it be feathery or furry, is that you're going into their house, you're going into an area where they may need peace and quiet. Anybody who goes to photograph them on a regular basis must have a damn good reason for doing that. You know, something such as trying to document and share what they're learning from those. Unobtrusive is good. Bird hides are good. When people go and get enthusiastic about these birds and decide that they want to photograph nests and whatnot, first piece of advice, and it's one that's expensive, buy a long lens. I shoot on a 150 to 500 lens. That means that I can actually get quite a fair way away from the nest without being encroaching. Don't make a lot of noise because that could disturb them. It could frighten them. Don't do anything whatsoever that's going to be noticed by the ospreys or by any bird that you're going to go and see or by any species that you're going to go and see. And be always, always, always aware of the fact that if you're there and you tell people about where the nests are, then that's going to encourage a whole lot of people to go there. And you've got to be very, very judicious about where you share the information about active nests. Ospreys are actually a lot more au fait with human activities because of their choice of nests. You'd understand that they're there. I think the thing is just generally to be as considerate as of them as you are of your own family. If you're going to visit a nest that's got chicks in it, you just make some thought to what it is that you'd feel if you had a whole bunch of people coming into the living room at your place and saying, oh, cup of tea would be nice, you know. And don't run around and tell everybody where they are. Just be cognizant of the fact that you are visiting somebody else's home. And the other thing, most of all, please, 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 please make sure that you pick up your fishing line, your fish hooks, because if you leave those in the fish, we know what's going to happen next. And there are plenty of ospreys that have lost their lives to snags from fishing line and such like.
Pip has many more stories, information, and some very cool photos to share about the eastern osprey. You can find links to her website and social media in the show notes. Before she departs, I'm keen to get some advice from Pip about where to go birdwatching in the Moreton Bay area, which is in southeast Queensland on Gubbi Gubbi country.
There are environment centres in Moreton Bay. We've got Creek Environment Centre, Osprey House Environment Centre, and Cumbajo. They're all different. So Cumbajo Rainforest Creek is meadows and a bit of remnant forest, and Osprey House is on the Pine River. So that's why it's a perfect spot for the Osprey nest. Osprey House is a very, very good place to go for the simple reason that they have the nest cameras on monitors inside the visitor centre. You can sit and watch what's going on as well as sitting on the veranda and watching the nest itself. We do, in Moreton Bay, we have a lot of areas where there are the rivers, two rivers come into confluence at the Pine River, so North Pine and South Pine. So anywhere along those, you'll find different sorts of birds. Sweeney's Reserve is a lovely place to go. Mangara is a lovely place to go. We have a lot of bird life up here, and botanic gardens. You know, Mount Cuth Botanic Gardens, fabulous place for birds. If there's a park around in Queensland, there's a bird or 70. Look on eBird, they've got a thing called Hotspots Map. So you can put in an address and see if there have been any birds reported there, and that will give you an idea of places to go. And that covers the world, not just Australia.
I'll add those spots that Pip just mentioned to the Weekend Birder Google Map, so you can look them up when you're next in the area. And I also recommend using eBird Hotspots to find good places to visit. I'll put a link in the show notes to this as well. The Moreton Bay area is also home to Toondah Harbour, which is a 120,000 hectare wetland that is home to turtles, dugongs, dolphins, and a range of migratory shorebirds, including the Far Eastern Curlew. I'm sending my deepest thanks to everyone who's been involved in an almost decade-long and now successful community campaign to protect this site from development. It's time for better nature laws. Many thanks to Pip for sharing her stories and passion with us. I really admire how she has chosen to use her retirement years to learn more about the Eastern Osprey and then share this joy of learning with others. How amazing are Weekend Birder guests? We're so lucky. In the coming weeks, I'll put a guide to identifying osprey and other fish-eating birds of prey on the website. Follow me on social media and visit the how-to section of weekendbirder.com to access this and other guides. Speak to you soon, birder friends.